The Mama Take Heart podcast with Rabrina Rettle is brought to you by Life Audio and is a part of our Faith Toolkit series. For more inspirational, faith-affirming podcasts, visit lifeaudio.com.
Welcome to Mama Take Heart, Understanding Your Gen Z Girl. I'm your host, Rabrina Rettle, and I'm here to help you be the gospel-centered, compassionate, and influential voice in your girl's life. Today, we're talking about helping our kids make wise and safe choices on the internet and social media and gaming apps. Proverbs 4, 6 through 7 tells us, "Do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. Though it costs all you have, get understanding." So today's guest is going to help us get wisdom and understand how to foster a safe digital environment. I'm talking to Tracy Foster, co-founder and executive director of START, Stand Together and Rethink Technology, an organization designed to bring parents and community leaders together to develop roadmaps for raising kids with healthy screen habits so that the next generation will grow up to be captivated by life, not screens. START provides training, tools, and tips that are expert-guided but custom-designed to help families maximize the benefits of technology while minimizing its harmful side effects. Their work has been featured by Diane Sawyer, The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times. More than 4 million people from around the world have gone to START's website seeking digital parenting advice. Tracy brings prior experience from 15 years of developing growth strategies for some of the world's leading organizations as a strategy consultant, focused on creating large-scale and lasting social change. On a project for one of the world's largest toy companies, she was captivated by the power of play in children's emotional, social, and cognitive development, fueling her passion for rethinking cultural norms around technology. Tracy graduated summa cum laude from Northwestern University and lives with her husband and two children in the Kansas City area.
Thank you so much, Tracy, for joining us today to offer us information, guidance, and encouragement.
I am just so glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, so let's get started. Why don't you tell us a little bit about START? Is it on your website now? It says westartnow.org. That is the website, but the name of the organization is
START, which stands for Stand Together and Rethink Technology. And we were started a few years ago by a group of moms who were seeing challenges, and I can share more about that, and said, hey, we need to band together and think about what we can do to help equip us, because we didn't grow up with these things. We don't know how to engage with our kiddos with technology. And how can we help equip and empower parents to step into the ring on some of these conversations? Because it can be so easy to just shrug our shoulders and say, I don't know how to help them. I don't know how to be a mentor or guide in this part of their life. And so we want to help fill that gap and get parents to feel like they are competent and confident to have those somewhat awkward conversations at times.
Right. That is very important, to kind of arm yourself with tools so that you know how to have those discussions with their kids. So tell us a little more about your calling and exactly what START does.
Okay. So I'm going to start it by flipping the tables on you, because I want to ask you, Rabrina, are you familiar with the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay. It's one of the New York Times bestsellers of all time. It's always on the top list. And it is read by more than 90% of moms when they're pregnant, or at least owned. I have to admit, I did not read that full thing. I started to get overwhelmed. But I'm curious, there's so many ways to prepare for having a baby. Why did you have that book or read that book?
Well, because I wanted to know what to expect. So, you know, when you're pregnant, you're excited, but you're still a little overwhelmed and you're curious and you're not kind of sure what you're getting into. You know, you want a child.
Yes. Okay. That's why I read it. Because for anyone who's a Saved by the Bell fan, I felt like Jesse Spano. in that infamous scene when she's singing, I'm so excited. And then she ends up bursting into tears and says, I'm so scared. Mm. Because I had yearned to have a baby. I was so grateful. It is a privilege I do not take for granted. Mm. And yet it was a new frontier. I felt scared and I felt overwhelmed and I wanted to do a good job. And my personality type, if I am stepping into a scary situation, I want to arm myself. I want as much of a roadmap as I can. So I pursued three things. I talked to my parents, my aunties, my, you know, all the generation that helped raise me to get their mm-hmm. advice. I talked to the parents just a little bit ahead of me. And then I read books like What to Expect When You're Expecting. And that trio of resources helped me, even though it was still so hard and it was still an uncertain, I had a sense of what some of the likely twists and turns might be. And we joke sometimes that START is the book that we wish existed that we would call What to Expect When You're Tech-specting. Wow. Because once again, we as parents are in a new frontier. We don't know what to do. And the difference between this and the situation we just talked about is I still do ask the generation ahead of me for advice, but they don't have any lived experience. They wish me well. You know, there is no book that's called What to Expect When You're Tech-specting that really helps you walk through how to do this. And what was most startling to myself and the others when we started this a few years ago is we then went to these friends who were just a little bit ahead of us, who when we asked about juggling youth sports or potty training or sibling issues, maybe they all said different random things. You know, you get a lot of different advice, sure. but they had some good word for us. Right. And when we went to those friends a little bit ahead of us and started to ask questions like, how much screen time is too much? Or how should I feel about social media or Fortnite or any of those questions? We were blown away because, Rabrina, instead of getting words of wisdom, what we were getting almost consistently was faces that got like a deer in headlights and they would say, I don't know what to do, but do mm-hmm. something different. And so we started to hear these devastating stories of just how it was creating at the lowest level stress, because we hear national surveys say that technology is the number one battleground between parents and kids. And in worst cases, really, really sad things that had happened. Mm-hmm. And so that was what motivated us to say, hey, let's just at least start having this conversation, because the other distinctive thing about it was so many of those people shared and have never told anyone about this. Mm. So there was so much angst and shame, and we wanted to bring this issue out so that people could know you're not alone. There is no playbook, but we together are going to become the wisdom makers. Mm. We're going to create the norms. We're going to have the courage to step into these conversations in the best way we can, knowing that we're going to fail. But we care enough about our kids to step into the ring.
Mm, that's good. Yes. So what have you learned since you all started this organization, the questions that parents were asking the most, and how to help their kids navigate their tech world?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've had a lot of consistent questions over time. And right now, in the middle of COVID, some of that is more on the back burner. And I would say the most consistent things we're hearing now are, how do I juggle this world where you can't get away from screens? Yes. How do I juggle virtual learning? All of those different things. And we've consolidated it into, you know, how do I keep my kid? We've consolidated it into three themes. How do I keep my kids safe? How do I keep my kids sane? You know, and how do I keep my kids seen, relationally seen? And we have a session where we talk about that in detail, specifically around the context of virtual learning, where so many people are living these days. And so we first felt like we were getting so many questions from parents that had such high expectations. And we boiled it down to those three questions because we realized this is not a year where you can have the same level of expectations for yourself as you do in a normal year. Mm-hmm. It takes a village, and our village is depleted and not available to help us in the same way. And so we felt like it would just be really helpful to help parents think, what are those three most important things? Keeping your kids safe, sane, and seen. And if you do that, that is good enough. That is huge during mm-hmm. this time.
Yes, to have some grace for yourself in this period. Okay, so let's talk about those three themes then. Would you expound a little more on the safe, sane, and seen?
Sure. So safe is really about the fact that, and I'll give a school metaphor. So We're used to the fact that our kids at school go out and play on the playground, certainly if they're in elementary school, right? But we know there's, at most schools, there's probably a fence or something around it. There are teachers monitoring them. We can have a sense that our kids are safe. There might be a bully on that playground, but probably someone's going to help intervene. And what's happening now is our kids are living in a virtual playground that has no monitors, mm-hmm. that has no fences, mm-hmm. where they can explore the whole world once they have access to a smart device or smartphone. And so we really need to think about, how can we have a safe environment for our kids? And some people, this feels very uncomfortable because it feels like, well, I want to make sure that my kid knows that I trust them. But we think it's like a seatbelt when you're in a car. I make my kids wear seatbelts. I think probably everyone listening does, right? I guess it's the law. And it's not because I don't trust them or trust myself. It's because accidents can happen. Right. And so we really encourage a few things related to safety. We could talk about this so much longer, but I'll just say a few things. The first one is having some layered filters on your devices. This includes things like at the router level, so that if your child accidentally types in whitehouse.com, they don't go to that page. My kids love sports. They love the store Dick's Sporting Goods, right? You do not want them accidentally typing. I cannot, that store, I'm like, oh, with Googling, that can lead to so many unexpected things.
Right.
So at the router level, you can filter some of that content so that they're less likely to accident their way in, or if they have an impulse to act out on, have fewer ways to do it. There are other things you need to think about, you know, with monitoring type services like Bark is one that we love when you have social media, things like that. So having the right type of seatbelts for your web access is a huge one. Another one is we really encourage families as much as possible to have kids use their devices in public areas, because that just increases accountability. And then they're less likely, if someone's about to walk by, they're less likely to start to go into things that they wouldn't feel comfortable having grandma see or their mom see. The third thing that I would say about safe is that even if you do all these things, I hate saying this, but it is probably a matter of not if our kids will end up seeing content that we would think is inappropriate, but when. Mm-hmm. And so one of the equally important things that we think about with safety is to be a safe harbor, mm-hmm. to have conversations with your kids, to let them know, hey, I love you. I will be fair. I will listen to you. I am for you. Mm-hmm. And if you come to me, I need to act that way. So you need to communicate up front. And then if they come to you with like a nude picture and they're like, hey, mom, look at what I just got. As much as you want to take their phone and chuck it against the wall, you need to count yourself a point and say, hey, this is a huge win that they're coming and showing this to me and asking for help. And I need to just have a calm face that says, oh, huh, tell me more about that. And you are going to be sweating and your heart's going to be racing on the inside. But the more that you can communicate calm, the more that your kids will come back so that you can help them when they get into these safety issues.
That is very true, because I have to say, my face, I do not have a poker face. My face shows every emotion. And so I've had to work at it when my kids come to me. I have to take a deep breath, although my kids are older now, so they know when I take a deep breath that I'm trying to gather myself. But for the most part, I take a deep breath. And sometimes I say, oh, okay, well, let's talk about that. Or, okay, let me get, give me a minute, you know, just so I can, you know, think this
That's
through.
Great.
Yeah. And so, and they will, and they know that when I need a minute that we're going to have a serious discussion. But like you said, I'm grateful that they felt safe enough to come to me instead of feeling shame to hide it. Okay. Let's go into the sane part now. We did safe. Now we're on sane.
Yeah. So sane, there's so much that I could go into for people who are interested in virtual learning. I'll keep it short here for our conversation. But what we think about is trying to help kids, you know, the phrase work hard, play hard, mm-hmm. a version of that, help them work hard when it's school time by limiting distractions and things like that to help them really focus, but then also help them break hard. So there are a couple dimensions. I'll talk about that point here. The first thing is sleep is so important. And especially during this day and age where mental health is shaky for a lot of people, we work closely with the mental health center and they share with us that sleep is the number one factor for mental wellness. And so we have that stat. And then we have another stat that says 80% of teens are using their phones when they're supposed to be sleeping.
Mm.
Now, even if they're using their phones to do, like, to learn Chinese or to watch something innocent like cat videos, that's not something bad, but it's not getting them sleep. Mm. The other multiplying effect is that actually our impulse control is lower at night, in the dark, in those types of situations. So actually a lot of the most regrettable things do happen then. But we really encourage, one of the biggest things is if you can use this time, if you don't already, to set up device-free bedtimes so that your kids check in their devices, they charge in your room. If they charge in your room, important note, turn off notifications. If you don't do that in advance, you'll learn it after night one. Or in the kitchen or somewhere like that, so that just like our devices recharge, so can our kids. So that will be a huge factor in keeping them sane. And the other thing is just during the day, when there are opportunities to say, hey, we know that we're on our devices like all day long right now because of COVID, and we need to take spaces and places that are going to be device free. We would suggest dinners, you know, have some meal each day. And it's for all of us, because FYI, plot twist, we're here to talk about how to help our kids have what we call digital health, which is maximizing the benefits of screens and minimizing side effects. But guess what? It starts with us, because we're the role models. So one of the beautiful things about doing things like device-free dinners is that we are showing we too are taking a break from our devices. Mm-hmm. But family meals, even if your kids are just grunting or arguing with each other, which I can relate to, they are one of the most formative places for establishing a sense of community and identity. And they are correlated with a multitude of wonderful effects related to our sanity. It doesn't need to be an organic, gourmet, homemade meal, thankfully. our family is fueled by Chipotle. We are major loyalty members there. But what it is about time. And the devices distract us. So the more that we can put those away, that helps to build the practice of stepping away for some time.
Okay. And then the final of the three themes is seen.
Okay. Yeah. Seen. I'll touch on a couple things about that, but that is just helping to make sure that our kids feel like they have a deep interactive relationship with some people. I think our teens in particular and us right now can fall into this world of thinking about, you know, 1,000 followers on a social media platform who are interacting with them in actually a very superficial way. Mm-hmm. And our bodies are geared for relationship. And relationship is deeper than just seeing, oh, they hearted my post. And so the more that we can do to try to help our kids during this time to focus, even if it's just a few, to say, how can we go deeper? And so some elements there is one of the things that we think about with screen time, because we get lots of questions, you know, how much screen time should my child have? And we give this really frustrating answer. We say, well, it depends. There's no magic number. Mm. But one of the things that we think about is the quality of screen time, not just the quantity. And so we put it into three categories: creating, consuming, and connecting. And we think that creating and connecting, so creating is like making a stop motion video, looking up a recipe, you know, all sorts of things, making Excel spreadsheets. A lot of the things that we do for work, they do for school, is creating. Connecting is where you're doing like a FaceTime call or texting back and forth. But really, connecting is deeper than just scrolling social media. We really like it when it's like a tennis match where it's serve and return. So we're talking back and forth, and it actually affects our brain. When you have that type of an interaction, it creates oxytocin, which is one of the most wonderful chemicals. And oxytocin acts like a Pac-Man and eats up cortisol. It offsets cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So the more that you can be liberal with your kids to say, hey, you want to have a FaceTime call? Sure. Hey, you want to call grandma and grandpa? Sure. That screen time that's connecting is really useful. And then the consuming, I'm grateful that we're able to have things. Last night, let me tell you, I really enjoyed watching a little segment from Jimmy Fallon, and it gave me energy. It's helpful to laugh, all of those different types of things. But just to realize that if so much time is spent consuming, once you get past a certain threshold, it's almost like eating junk food, where it actually doesn't feel good anymore. That first Milky Way, the first piece of Halloween candy tastes good, but then there are diminishing rewards.
Mm.
The other thing I would say about seeing is we as parents, you know, there's this very real sentiment of the digital divide that we've heard about for years, where, you know, lower income families, their kids are less likely to have devices, whereas more resourced families do. Okay, that's the old version of digital divide. But we feel like there's a very real digital divide between parents and kids. And it's natural. It happens because parents don't know as much about technology. Their kids know so much. So it's kind of like, oh, I don't really know what to do. So that's your world and I'm not engaging in it. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we think about being seen is that we as parents need to acknowledge our kids are living their adolescence on their devices. And how can we step into their interests? So if you have a kid that loves Instagram, get Instagram and get it not just to like their posts, which you need to have a define the relationship type conversation about how do you want me to interact with you on social media? Because I can't just put like love and hearts on all the posts or else I embarrass you.
Right.
But also then like invite your five best friends. Say, hey, I want to follow you on Instagram too. So that you can start to have the experiences and you can sit down at dinner and say, man, I was on Instagram today and my friend Stephanie posted this picture and I've just got to tell you, sweetheart, have you ever had this happen? I really have felt bad about myself all day since seeing this picture. Mm-hmm. You know, it made me feel like I wasn't enough. And when we start to lead with vulnerability, because we are seeing, we understand Instagram's really fun. We say that at some of the other times, but then we share some of the challenges. That is when our kids are more likely to open back up to us. So we just encourage you to step into the ring. If they love a YouTuber, watch the person's YouTube videos with them, even if you think they're really silly.
Yeah, some of them are funny. Yeah, some are funny, some are silly. One thing I have to say when you said about the social media, interact with them and kind of have that conversation, enter into their world. Yes, the following them on social media, because then you do get into their world, you see what they're looking at, and then you can have those deeper discussions. And then also, like when you said about the embarrassing, my daughter did tell me, you don't have to like everything I put on social media. So I'm like, okay, she doesn't want me to be seen. She doesn't mind that I'm there, but she doesn't necessarily want me to be seen there. So I respected her wishes. And now I only like 2 out of 5 posts.
But I love that you had that conversation, right? I mean, how great is it that, and first of all, when you err on the side of liking so many things, like I've just got to say, you know that your kid needs to tell you, hey, that's embarrassing. But at the same time, they had to have stored that up in their heart about like, mom, no one gives me more smiley emojis and thumbs up and claps than you.
Exactly. That was the exact conversation. Okay. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, this is really good information. I really appreciate all three themes that you all focus on. And one thing that you said that I also appreciate is that it starts with us, that we are setting the temperature, so to speak, of what they are going to do and what it looks like to be a responsible digital citizen. And I know that your website kind of talks about that with the start. But can you give us your acronym briefly, just a little bit from each of the letters?
So our name officially stands for Stand Together and Rethink Technology, but we've morphed it to say, what are our top 5 principles that we encourage families? So we're going to go through those letters with different words. So S is start with yourself, because we really are the models. And many of our kids are learning norms and values from before they ever will have a device based on how we respond to our devices. And then they continue to key off of us. And we work with a local mental health organization that is a teen council related to suicide. And they have shared with us that their number one recommendation for parents to help their teen's mental health is put down your phone. Mm. Because yeah, your teen might seem like they don't want to interact with you, but there are times they notice that you didn't see their hit in the baseball game because you were on your phone, you know? So we need to be more accessible so that at that time when they happen to walk in and go through the kitchen, boom, we're there. We just happen to be available, you know? So I think it does start with ourselves. Then the T, we've talked about these two things related to sanity, but we have the T mean tables and bedtimes. So it's about device-free zones, ideally away from the dinner table and out of bedrooms. Our A is about accountability, which aligns a lot with the safety. We can go into this more, but really there are hazards online. And so how can we create the structures so that we can keep our kids safe? The R is ride, practice, drive. And what this means is in almost every area of parenting, we give our kids gradually increasing responsibility as they demonstrate competence with a previous level. You can think about that with cooking. I remember when my kids started making yogurt parfaits, I didn't say, hey guys, why don't you make some stir fry? right? And the yogurt parfait stage took so long and there was so many mistakes and messes, right? Well, we compare this to driving. So like a smartphone is a really powerful, really valuable tool that can take us places otherwise we could never go, just like a car. But it needs a training process. And so when you look at driving, kids start by riding in the back seat. It's that start with yourself. And they learn about it. They ask, how many speeds do you have on the wipers? You know, why does your turn signal make noise? Whatever. They just ask all these random questions. And they are actually learning a bit about it. And that's how our kids are teeing off of our digital use as well from early ages. The next stage is the learner's permit, right? Where you're practicing. And I remember where I was when I was in that stage. I went with my dad to the local high school parking lot and I was so overwhelmed. It was scary actually to have so much responsibility. And I drove like 10 yards forward and I was like, done. I nailed it and I'm done for the day. That was all that I wanted to do. But right now what's happening is most people, because you know better, you do better. But we're learning about the effects of giving a kid at age 9. That's the average age that a kid gets a cell phone. And it's fully, the world is open to them, right? And so what can we do to say, maybe there can be a gradual training process? What's our use case? Our use case is I want to call my kid. I want them to call me if soccer practice gets canceled. Well, great. If that's really what it is, let's start with this really cool walkie-talkie called a relay that can connect the kid to your phone. And then maybe they move up to the Gizmo watch where they can call and text 10 preset numbers, including 911, right? And then maybe they move to, I don't know if they would like that we call it this, but we call it a dumb phone. And it's by Gab. And it has just really basic features. We love this phone so much. And then they move on to a fully loaded smartphone, you know, so that they can start to take steps and you can talk with them about, here are the expectations. Here's how we use this. And they can learn over time. And the same approach can be taken with apps and other things like that. So that's our R. And then our final T is time well spent. Mm-hmm. So we really, really believe that we are not just trying to call our kids away from something with a slap on the wrist, but that we're trying to call them into something better. And so how can we as a family say, this is what time well spent is in our lives? These are the attributes that we want to live. Generosity, you know, hospitality, kindness, adventure, fitness, whatever it is. And how can we look at and build a framework in our kids' minds of how can our technology help us to do those things? You know, like a Eventbrite for meals, a sign up genius. There are lots of ways that technology helps us live out these things we value. And then how can we start to notice that technology is getting in the way? And so trying to help create that vision of what our family and what we each individually are striving for and believe is time well spent, and making sure that we don't lose sight of that because our screens are just so enticing.
Tracy, I so appreciate you spending time with us today and taking time out to have this conversation for our listeners. And I just wish you well in continuing the organization. The website again, if you can tell us the website to go to.
Yep, it is westartnow.org. And if any of you guys love listening to audio content, we are launching a podcast called Screen Sanity, hosted by my co-founder, Krista. And it is going to just literally walk through that driver or the learner's permit stage to say, hey, how do you have some of these conversations? Because we joke that this is so easily to be like a parenting book where you read it and you're like, wow, that sounds really good. Okay, great. I'm going to go implement a device bedtime. And then you do it and it's like, ooh, that wasn't as easy as it sounded in the book. Mm. So that'll be a place where we press into some of those conversations and how to make it work. But just another option.
That's great. Also, if you just go to the website, there is a plethora of information. There's lots of information on that website and some of the items for how to filter for safety is also on the website. So go ahead and take a short visit there to see what they have. There's so much information that I believe will be very helpful to you. So parents, I just want you to know that you're not alone. Remember, God is for you, and with His Spirit, you are filled with courage and strength of purpose. So don't fret, Mama. Instead, take heart.
Mama Take Heart is a production of Life Audio and the Salem Web Network. If you liked what you just listened to, would you take a second and leave us a rating in your favorite podcast app? It really does help more people like you find our show. This podcast is produced by me, Kelly Givens, and Steven Sanders, with executive oversight by Stephen McGarvey. You can find more podcasts like this over at lifeaudio.com.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.